Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Welcome to the show. I've done this before, but I'm going to do it again even better. Always we get better, correct? We're going to talk about great bowel movements, to put it plainly. But what I want to slant you towards today is an understanding that that big tube down at the end of you, the one that all the waste products come out of, is a living, dynamic ecosystem. It's an organ. Now, we think of the heart as an organ, and we think of the brain as an organ, and we think of the liver as an organ, but kind of the large intestine is just that place where all the stuff goes before it goes into the sewer, and that's what we think its job is. Well, after 50 minutes, I hope I'm going to have you mind turned around on that, in the sense that that large intestine, you know, traditionally the large intestine was where people like Bernard Jensen, some of our greatest nutritionists, claimed 90% of your health actually resided. So over the years, the expression was 80%, 90% of your health is in the large intestine. Now, how does that make any sense when traditionally the civilian understands that just as a tube that gets rid of your waste products? Well, that's the point. And that's the point of today's show, to turn your perception of the large intestine into what it actually is, a living, dynamic organ. And it's not what you think it is. That's why I do a show like this. You know, everybody can scan YouTube and read all sorts of neat stuff, and that's great. But what this show tries to do is give you what you can't get on YouTube. And that comes out of a lot of experience, and that comes out of concepts pieced together and then paced against clinical experience, drawing conclusions, going back to the blackboard of health, and seeing what really works based on what principles. And if you're new to the show, get on the website, straighttalk.cc, that's not .com, that's .cc, and that's two T's, Straight Talk, one word, lowercase. Try to follow with the pictures. If you can't, just listen. I'll describe it as best I can. Those of you who are already online, please look at the pictures. A picture tells a thousand words, and that's why those pictures are there. Saves you time. Show 309. We've got 309 hours over 5 years. It's its own encyclopedia. All right, the large intestine. Biggest point today, and the one, if you take home anything, take home this. The health of the large intestine, great bowel movements, everything that I've suggested that the intestines are, really doesn't have a lot to do with nutrition. Now, how's that? There's an opener for a nutrition show. It doesn't have a lot to do with your nutrition. Great bowel movements and the health of the colon, more than anything. And if you get in there in the trenches with people over decades, you will understand this to be the case. Number one, it's your head. The psyche creates the health in the intestinal tract. The psyche creates the health in the large intestine. And I'll just cut to the chase. It's called potty training. That's right. Little kids learn to poop, and it's either a nightmare, a torture, a misery, or it's a party. If your potty training experiences were a party, right there you've got half the health of your large intestine. There, end of show. You can go out and do your run now. You don't even need to listen. So I'm being tongue-in-cheek, yes, of course, but the point is, most of what you see out there, most of you out there in Radioland, when you have a problem defecating, you make a few nutritional changes, you stretch a little bit more, you go out and get your favorite poop powder, And voila, you're back on track and we don't have to think about it. That's not who I'm talking to today. People who listen to shows like this are interested in great bowel movements or a healthy ecosystem, or their digestive tube, and that includes bowel movements, have just been a life of misery. So I want to make sure I include everybody, but those of you who have had chronic issues defecating over the years, and you're running around looking for your herbal solutions, well, yes, that's important, but it's up in your head. Look to the head. Look to the early childhood experiences. Freud called it the anal stage, right? One, we've got the oral stage. Did you get mommy's breast? Or did mommy deny you breast? Or did she pull it away because she didn't want to do it? Or did you have to compete with your brother, right? Two kids in the same year and a half, in that year and a half span there, right? If you have a child and then a year later you have another child, both those children can compete for the breast. Mommy may run out of milk. Point being, the oral stage, preceding the anal stage, the oral stage is your early introduction to the pleasure of the oral tube, the orifice. There's another orifice down on the other end. It's called the anal sphincter. And up higher is the secondary anal sphincter. And these are orifices that are supposed to teach the child. They're there for the child to explore and for the child to learn to derive pleasure. The defecation reflex is a pleasurable reflex. And those of us with healthy bowels know that it's a pleasurable reflex. People out there over the years that have the issues with bowel movements are generally people who skipped the anal stage. They didn't get it done right. Boy, could I tell you stories. I had a young lady once with lupus years ago, and she could recall the time that as a child, 2 years old, on the toilet bowl and then falling into the bowl, literally falling into the bowl and screaming for her mom, who couldn't be there because mom was drunk and on the living room couch. Now, you can understand why at 25 or 30, that child is going to be one of those kids, one of those young adults that has a difficult time defecating. How about you? You remember this one. You're in the car. There's a family of five or six. And what are you told? Everybody goes, you're going to laugh, but this is true. Everybody goes to the bathroom at the same time. Large families, to get by, you've got to do it like boot camp. So everybody eats at the same time. You have the same kind of food. You have the same flavor ice cream. And you defecate at the same time. Well, suppose you were the one that just, it didn't work that way. And you were always the one that had to defecate at the wrong time. Defecation anxiety. I could go on for days. Lots of you in the audience today that have had a history of poor bowel movements have that history because the nerves that are supposed to line the intestine to create the defecation reflex, those nerve fibers have been interrupted by the psyche. The body fails to have pleasure. Now, we have a word that kind of engulfs this, and when we say the enteric nervous system, so if you're on the website now, if you can get to, let me see here, that would be picture number, there we go, my tech's got everything up now. If you would move on down to, no, she doesn't, not quite yet. All right, she's missing a few still. I had a picture, it didn't come up yet, of the enteric nervous system. The enteric nervous system is the neurological term that we use to actually describe the investment of nerve fibers into the intestines that are related to the opiate experience, the pleasure experience, serotonin, GABA. the opioids, and everything we derive as a sense of pleasure when we go to the bathroom and defecate, that begins when you're that young. Now, what do you do about that? In somatic psychology or manipulative medicine that understands how to release psychically derived tension, you learn to retrain yourself through the defecation reflex. Once the intestines begin to constrict, once they constrict unduly because of childhood tensions, the muscles around the intestines constrict. And as those muscles constrict, well, that's where you can be manipulated. You can be communicated with. You can be spoken to through the piriformis muscle, the psoas muscle. You can be spoken to through the perineal muscles. And if those muscles learn to relax, the intestines begin to learn to relax. So we have to start on the outside very often to get to the inside. There have been lines of psychology of somatically based bodyworks that will start on the inside. They'll actually do manipulations up inside the anal sphincter, into the coccyx. These are all done very legally, very therapeutically. But they're done in the name of turning on the tension pattern to what it is to relax itself. Now, if you're on the website and you're at picture number 46, you see a great picture of the brain and the gut. The gut's brain, known as the enteric nervous system, is located in sheaths of tissue lining the stomach's small, large intestine. What it's saying is something in the way of nerve plexuses communicating with the brain, all of which in you, with that difficult childhood, with that faulty anal stage in social development, are left with a very tight, constricted intestinal tract. And the muscles surrounding it are equally tight. We say psychogenic constipation. We say you, well, you're looking for all those herbs to find because that's going to make you defecate correctly. And, of course, you don't have great success. You, well, your cause is more on the psychogenic side. All right, so let me throw that one down because I really want to move. We've got so much to cover in today's show, but keep that in mind. Ask yourself if that's you. Next point is structure. There are actual structural reasons that people have difficult times defecating. There are structural reasons that prevent your large intestine from resurrecting into the healthy, dynamic organism that it actually is. So the structural causes, you got to go to the psoas muscle. Now, lots of you have heard me talk about this muscle. I'm going to give it to you today with a perspective that shows you, I want you to focus on the relationship of that psoas muscle and tension in the psoas muscle to the ramification into the large intestine. And that's what I want you to look at. So those of you on the site, if you would go simply to picture number 8, go to picture number 8. You're looking at the psoas muscle. Those of you driving, if you touch your belly and you go underneath that little bit of that small pad of fat, or maybe you don't have any, if you go underneath your muscles, if you go and you touch your guts, meaning your small and large intestine, and you pull all of those out, in other words, you get gutted. So sorry to be so graphic, but have you ever gutted a fish? Have you ever caught a fish and gutted it? Or a chicken and gutted it? Or any animal and gutted the animal? Do you know what gutting means? Gutting means you make a slice along the central line of the abdomen, you open up the muscles of the abdomen, you pull out all the organs. When you do that on an animal or a human being, there's a huge muscle underneath there. It looks like the one in picture number 8. It's one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful muscle next to the masseter in your body. It's called the psoas muscle. Years ago, I did massive amounts of dissection in cadaver labs. I've thoroughly dissected at least 100 bodies over the years. And when you get to this muscle underneath all the guts, it's shocking. It's like the first time you ever saw a sequoia tree. You go up the coast the first time, think of it, when you saw that redwood and you compared the size of your SUV to the width of the trunk of a redwood. The way you felt in that moment, standing next to that tree. It's one of the most amazing feelings, isn't it? That's what it's like seeing a psoas muscle for the first time. In a large 6-foot male athlete, the first time you see a psoas muscle, you react to it like the first time you saw a redwood. Now, here's the point. Here is the glaring point. You must get this. So you'll never understand the large intestine or defecation. I can do it best with a picture. I want you to go to picture number 9. That's a healthy psoas muscle. It's a relaxed psoas muscle. It's you at 16 or 17 years old. It's got length and it's relaxed. Those of you that are not on the website, I'm going to tell you that this muscle, where it sits, over the years begins to get tight. As it gets tight, it starts to move forward. It goes anterior. As it shortens, it displaces anterior. We say as you age, the psoas muscle, underneath all your guts, having that much dominance to your abdominal cavity, shortens and displaces anteriorly towards your belly button. As it does, it's going to crush your intestines. It's going to twist the nerves to the intestines. It's going to throw off your entire body. It's going to fixate the sacrum. It's going to leave you powerless in the perineum. It's going to hurt your menses. It's going to destroy your erections. It's going to make your lower abdominal muscles weak. It is going to rain havoc upon the world. And this is normal. This happens to everybody. This is why we say athletes lose their legs. This is why horses are put out to stud after a while, put out to just fertilize after a while, because their legs go. When your legs go as an athlete, when your legs go as a civilian, when we say you're starting to move like grandpa, it's because that psoas has shortened and displaced anteriorly. Now, what does that have to do with defecation? It crushes that muscle as it displaces anteriorly, crushes your guts. That's why many of you have that belly that pops out. Ladies, gentlemen, right? Maybe you don't feel so fat, but then why does that belly pop out? Why do so many of you have digestive disorders and you just can't figure it out? One day, chicken was okay. The next day, chicken bloated you. One day, your favorite drink was okay. The next day, it bloated you. Can't make rhyme or reason out of this bloating and indigestion with the choices in food. One day, it's good. The next day, it's not. Lots of you are like that. You're not looking outside nutrition. You have to look outside nutrition. If you're going to understand the large intestine, if you're going to listen to all these shows about probiotics and prebiotics and parasite cleanses and colon cleanses and go get colonics and this, that, and the other thing, you need to just relax behind a simple concept. All of that is secondary to the anterior displacement of the psoas muscle. Now, my regular listeners know I talk about this in lots of my shows scattered throughout, talk about what to do about an anteriorly displaced psoas muscle. Well, I could cut to the chase and go to picture 12. See why you got to look at the pictures? Those of you looking at picture 12, those of you driving, when you get home, get on the website, straighttalk.cc. That's .cc, not .com with 2 T's. Do that. I know you got to watch the road. Don't look at anything but the road. But you can hear my voice on radio. Get home, and when you have a chance, get on there and go to my show. Very easy to do. Don't charge anything for these shows. There's a stretch that if you can do it, if you can get there, if you can start to stretch the groin, you can start to stretch the psoas. To stretch the psoas, you have to stretch the quads. To stretch the quads, the leg and the top of the foot have to be flexible. There's an art and a science to stretching. Do not think it's that simple. It's simple, but it's deep. Everything that's worthwhile learning is simple, but it's always deep. And that's what you have to understand. Our culture and our version of health is going in the opposite direction. The knowledge seekers of today are not being beseeched or compelled to go deep. They're being compelled to learn how to graze along YouTube and Google and do searches and make the mistake of calling that research, and then compiling 500 sheets of data, all of which they're stupid enough. I shouldn't say stupid. I apologize for that. It's just annoying. Foolish enough to think that that's research. It's not research. Research is getting concepts from the data that you accumulate. Concepts from the data that you accumulate and bringing that into a functional model. And stretching, therefore, just like health, is not about data acquisition. Stretching isn't something you just learn off of video. So get to my shows 243 and 244. I try to cover some of this on those shows. But here's the bottom line. If you don't know how to stretch the psoas, if you don't evolve yourself to the point where you can stretch the psoas will invariably, yes, that's you, displace anteriorly. And you're going to suffer in the intestinal tract. Now, it might not be to the point where it interferes with good bowel flow, but you will suffer one way or the other. This is one of the central tenets in Ida Rolf's work. Again, Rolf, a biochemist, pioneered chemotherapy on a postgraduate level at the Rockefeller Institute in the 1920s in New York City. I mean, no shortage of brains with this dynamic woman. Ended up running around in a suitcase for 30 years trying to teach people about the psoas muscle and what it meant to the integrity and health of the body. Now, that's big. So I can't give you the whole thing. I can only lay it down for you and invite you to get more interested in it. All right, today's show. Today's show. Great bowel movements, laws governing the ecosystem of the large intestine. So what's my point? Two laws. Look to your psyche and look to your structure. Both of them have, in ways I've explained and more, powerful influences on whether or not you're going to have a great bowel movement, on whether or not you're going to turn that large intestine from a fairly functional sack of roughage and feces on its way out, you're going to turn it into a dynamic, living, intelligent organism. Now, why and what does that mean? Upon what basis do you begin to understand the large intestine as an intelligent little organ, little brain within your organism? Well, one thing you got to do is go to the probiotics. Now, we're doing with the probiotics the good bacteria, the stuff that begins with mommy's breast milk. We're getting to the point, because of DNA testing, just because of the overall advances in science, where the ratio of good bacteria in the intestinal tract is starting to substantiate our understanding of why people get disease or why they don't get disease. And as the technologies to study the probiotics in the human gut enhance, and they are enhancing rapidly, as DNA sequencing is becoming the law of the land, you're going to hear more and more and more about how you seed that intestinal tract controls this, that, and the other thing. And I think that's good. But you see, what's bad about it is it makes it more complicated than it is. And as we're getting more and more specific about which bacteria does what and in what ratio you need it relative to the, we're forgetting something. And that is that your autonomic nervous system, meaning your enteric nervous system, is controlling so much of the language that the probiotics need to function intelligently. Now, my fellow doctors that listen to the show, I have about 4 or 5 dozen. Understand this, especially the chiropractors, the acupuncturists. Yeah, you give your clients probiotics, or civilians listening, go out and go to your favorite health food store and get the best probiotic and prebiotic you can find. Because now more and more science is showing that the ratio of the good bacteria, not the good bacteria to the bad bacteria, I'm just talking about Bifidus, Bulgaricus, Acidophilus, all the strains of Bifidus, and the ratios of these things being so absolutely important to the specific health concern of the individual. I'm going to say it like this. I'm going to lay down a deeper concept. And if you're losing me, get to the website, because I got to give you the inside information. And that is, right now at the forefront of probiotic research, I have colleagues who are microbiologists, immunologists, biochemists, and they're all down there pecking around in the large intestine, looking at the ratios of good bacteria there, making the claims, well, we found that there is a lower incidence of Bifidus or Bulgaricus or Acidophilus with people that have multiple sclerosis. At the same time, it's this strain of Bifidus that's more linked to cancer than it is to anything else. And all of this is good, but you see, what we're forgetting is that's why God gave us an autonomic nervous system. The influence of the neurological system into the intestinal tract is the intelligence through which the body knows how to ratio these guys out. Again, science forgets that God just might have put a perfect organism intact if we'll just employ those laws. You really got to get this. Because whether it's holistic medicine or whether it's allopathic medicine, science often makes this error. And this is a classic example. It's great to investigate the specific influences of good bacteria, increasingly through technologies, DNA sequencing being one example. But the point is that in the end, we're going to be going around in circles if we don't kick back, relax, and look at the intact, inherent human mechanism that figures this out way faster and way longer and in a way more trustworthy way than we're ever going to achieve. And again, we're back to the enteric nervous system. Pleasure in the intestinal tract. It feels good to eat food. I don't mean stuffing yourself with Winchell's donuts. I mean that if we look at Chinese medicine, each food has a specific function in the body. Each food favors a certain physiological process. Each food in the high art of food consumption is consumed through the intuitive faculty, which is the way the body releases its opiates, which is the way the body uses the nervous system to reinforce balance within the flora. I just said a lot. That's a lot. That's an integration. The neurological system will teach us how to balance the flora. So yes, you have to feed the flora. You have to feed the good bacteria. To feed the good bacteria, Premier Research Labs, their probiot, outstanding stuff. Natasha Trenov, her probiotics, outstanding stuff. Both Dr. Marshall and Natasha Trenov knew each other. Both respected each other at one time, I think, deeply. She mentions Dr. Marshall in her book, and I put her books on picture number 27. If you've got that old copy, Probiotics by Trenov, she owns a company called Natron. They make good probiotics. I think Premier Research Labs make a better probiotic, but they're both outstanding. And the point is, even in that book, Dr. Marshall's name is mentioned respectfully. He's one of the most eminent doctors with an understanding of what the intestines are about. Now, Fact of the matter is, you're going to put a good probiot into your body, but then what's telling the body what to do with the probiot? You can't. You just don't put it in. You have to put it in and have some central system organize it. That's the enteric nervous system. So yes, you should experiment with your probiotics. Now, if you really want to do it even more right than right, make your own probiotics. In other words, learn to ferment your own foods. There's nothing better. I don't care what anybody puts in a bottle. If you work clinically with people and you watch the people that get into making their own kimchi, that culture and pickle their own vegetables, that really get into the art of it, that get into making their own kefirs, their own yogurts, for some people their kombuchas. But if you really play around with cultured foods, great book by Katz, Sandor Katz, on fermentation and the art. Central to our cultures across seven continents over thousands of years was fermentation of food. Yeah, we're busy. We're the microwave generation. Bottom line, if you really want to get into the probiotics, do it through your homemade fermented products. Learn that art. And if you're too busy, find a couple of good companies. I just gave you a few. But don't forget about the prebiotics. Those are the foods. The role of the prebiotics is to feed the probiotics. So you got the prebiotics feeding the probiotics. You've got probiotics of high quality. I mentioned a couple. Then you've got the probiotics of superior quality to anything. And that's the stuff you make on your own. The psyche. The structure. The probiotics. We're starting to turn the large intestine now into a healthy, dynamic organism. But what about the parasites? What about the pathogens? What are we going to do when the balance, because of all the things that are bad, what are we going to do about when the balance, because of all the things that you have done that are bad, start to build up so that there's not enough probiotics, there's not enough prebiotics, and there's too many pathogens? Now we're looking at a different kind of large intestine. Okay, I'll say it another way. In the ideal of you, your parents loved each other. When you were gestating, your mother and father were singing hymns every night and praising God for a healthy baby. And you popped out in 20 minutes, and you were loved dearly from the minute the sperm met the egg. Then you popped out and the party began. And you were breastfed amply. You got all the milk you needed. And when it came time to take control over your own anal sphincter, the day you succeeded at it, everybody threw a party. And your relatives came. It was the poop party. And you knew something good was going down, and you knew you had lots to do with it. Because everyone was singing your praise from the day they knew your mom was pregnant. And there you are at 2 years old, and you're starting to master your defecation reflex, and everybody's clapping and applauding you, and you're having 2 to 3 good ones a day, and you're sleeping great hours. And you become a young athlete, male or female, and you keep your psoas stretched out, and your emotions are in balance, and now you're 16 or 17 or 18. And if we go down there into your large intestine, and when we look at who's hanging out there, everything is in order. You've got the central nervous system, the autonomic nervous system through the vagus nerve, balancing the ratio of all the probiotics. You're eating well, so you're getting all the prebiotics, and everything's happy, and it's Leave It to Beaver, and it's we live happily ever after, right? Okay. Now, if that's not you, and the opposite happens, and we'll skip that story, you end up with a nose backwards ecosystem in your gut that's not a healthy ecosystem. And what that means is your probiotics have nothing to say. They may not be there. They may be there a little bit. Antibiotics, IV antibiotics. Are you kidding me? I mean, sometimes you just need intravenous antibiotics to save your life. But boy, if you've had a chronic sequela of IV antibiotics, you're in trouble. Everything I've seen over 20 years when people perforate in the intestines, I mean, there's so many reasons for this, and you've been on IV antibiotics on and off for a year, your life changes. Psychogenic constipation, people that never poop, people that are going once every 3 days and not well, and even with all sorts of poop powders, not well, and then they're 40 or 50 and now they've gained weight, they've got diabetes, they've got more emotional problems, added to emotional problems. I know that's not any one of us, so I'm only talking hypothetically. But here's my point, and this is the point. You can't go in with a probiotic and expect to get anywhere. So now I'm going to introduce another clinical pearl, a concept here, all right? And the concept is simple. If you're a mess down there, if your ecosystem is really all backwards, upside down, if your pathogenic bacteria, viruses, bacterias, parasites, funguses are the law of the land and the probiotics don't have much say, don't think as much in terms of going out and putting the probiotics in and the prebiotics, because if you do that, it's going to turn you around, because it's not. You got to hit that ecosystem. It's an ecosystem, which means there are multiple variables that are looking for influence and balance. And when your pathogenic titer is so dominant to your probiotic titer, this notion of we'll go out and buy a couple of probiotic capsules or it doesn't really work. So what works? We have to discuss mucus. To understand what works, you've got to understand mucus. If we didn't have large glands in the large intestine secreting copious amounts of mucus, we'd dry out, ulcerate, and burn a hole through the walls of the large intestine in a day or two. Deal with, to compensate for the filth, toxicity, potential infectious titer of the large intestine, the body produces tons of mucus. Mucus is good. Stagnant mucus is bad. And of course, stagnant mucus is what most people who I just described suffer from. Now, when people do these colon cleanses, and we're going to get to colon cleanses, the first thing I want to just make sure you understand, go to picture number 37. Picture number 37. Go to picture 37. Now, there. That's that rope. That's that fecal rope. That's that dark black feces that comes out when you do any one of a number of colon cleanses. The first thing I want to tell you is, you see, when you see a picture like that, there's an implication. And the implication is you spent the money, you did the colon cleanse, and that stuff was up there. And it's real good you spent the money and did that colon cleanse, because now that stuff's come out. And if it didn't come out, it would have stayed up there. And there's tons of it. And of course, the colon cleanse companies love this. They love you to think this. It is a lie. It is a myth. It is absolute nonsense. That is not the way it is. Yes, if you have cancer, if you have Hirschsprung's colon, if you have a disease, you can get so impacted with feces. You know, there's that old myth running around, that old story about John Wayne and how he developed megacolon at the end of his life and they pumped out 100 pounds of feces or something as they autopsied him, so on and so forth. Yeah, when you've had defecatory issues for weeks upon weeks upon weeks, you can build up lots of feces. But don't think that stuff, by and large, is what's up there. What you're seeing in these advertisements of people that sell stuff to do colon cleanses, all of which are good to do. I'm going to get to that part. I'm not saying they're not vital for your health. I'm saying I don't want you to be misled. I want you to be the smart consumer. The reason people pull that out, if any of you have done these colon cleanses and you pull out all this mucoid ropey plaque and it's got all these corrugations in it, that's the herbs you're taking. All of these cleanses are using bentonite clay and okra and psyllium and all sorts of things that make, you know, cement-like, Play-Doh-like structures, clay-like congestions of herbs, of feces, and of mucus. See, the concept is you put enough herbs in to scrape the mucus off the inner wall of the intestine, but the herbs expand out so that they replicate the inner lining of the large intestine. The inner lining of the large intestine is what we call septated or corrugated. So it's got a back and forth sort of a figure to it. And when you put the herbs in there, they expand out against the inner walls of the intestines. And that pressure across the inner walls of the large intestine, due to the herbs expanding with all the water in the herbs, the water in the colon, all the abrasive herbs from okra to psyllium to bentonite clay, etc., all the things that increase peristalsis, all the things that soften stool, all the things they put in these cleanses that break up mucus, collectively push out against the bowel wall, and out come these ropes. And as you keep stuffing the herbs down, you keep defecating out these ropes. The implication that those ropes are there, living there, and it's a good thing you did it because those ropes were up there, and if you didn't do the cleanse, they would have been up there, but they never would have come out. That is nonsense. The herbal cleanse creates those ropes. Those ropes weren't there. The herbal cleanse creates the mucoid plaque. That mucoid plaque, as you view it in your hand, you know, these pictures, people pull them out in their hands and they show them off. Funny groups of people we are, us holistic people, right? The implication that that stuff is up there, that's not true. But to produce that in a colon cleanse is very important and very healthy. To make that through the herbal concoction and have it come out of your body is very healthy. Why? Because what you're doing as you make, purposely, deliberately make the mucoid plaque is you're scraping the mucus off the bowel wall. Now, it's in the mucus, the very thin layers of mucus, in the large intestine wall, that a stagnant colon will begin to harbor infection in the form of biofilms. The biofilms are mucus plugs that live up along the walls on the inside of the large intestine. And you need to sequentially, intermittently, over the years, scrape these biofilms, mechanically scrape them, to mechanically push them off the walls of your very mucousy large intestine. And if you do that continually, successfully, through multiple colon cleanses, you're going to start to regenerate the inner lining of the large intestine. You're going to kill the cells. Remember, the epithelial cells that line the large intestine have a lifespan. And if you gently scrape them, right? We don't want to harshly scrape them, but if we gently scrape them, gently clean them, gently debride them of mucus, they tend to produce fresh mucus. The crypt glands produce fresh mucus. The epithelial cells tend to regenerate faster. So the same way you dry brush, think of it. You dry brush your skin to make your skin soft and healthy. Well, this is a dry brushing of the inner skin of your large intestine. And that's what these colon cleanses amount to. Now, when you talk about pathogenic bacteria, when you talk about viral loads, when you talk about parasites, where do you think those animals are living? They're living deep in these crevices in the large intestine and protecting themselves as an infectious egg, as an infectious hive, or as an infectious nest of bacteria. They're using their mucus to protect themselves from your immune system. Now, you can plant all the probiotics up there you want, and you can depend on all the immune system you want, and you can depend on all the antiparasitics and anti-infective herbs you want. You can depend on a lot of things, but those bugs, those pathogens, off your derailed ecosystem over 30 or 40 years need to be scraped. That's the purpose of these colon cleanses. So remember, I'm not saying colon cleanses aren't vital. They're very vital. I just want you to understand the difference between the importance of it and the marketing of it. Now, you look at picture 41. That's Richard Anderson, Cleanse and Purify. I think he's out of Australia. He's a great naturopath, iridologist. Was on the market years ago, wrote a couple of volumes of this Cleanse and Purify stuff. Fantastic. Fantastic reading. Really gets you in the mood for this. He's got a company you can send away for a colon cleanse for. Just wonderful, wonderful stuff. Of course, picture 43 is Bernard Jensen. Bernard Jensen was, he was Norwegian, at least his lineage. He started out in New York. He actually started out in New York City working with John D'Adamo, the father of the guy Peter. John started that whole blood type thing, and Jensen and John D'Adamo worked together. Jensen had to come west because he had asthma, and he favored the hot, dry of Escondido, and he had a health farm in Escondido. You know, years ago, nutritionists, if they could, they didn't function out of an office. They kind of had property. And you came to the property, and it was a learning center. And that's the way Jensen did it. We ought to do that again. You see, it's cost prohibitive today. For the most part, you can't do it. Land's so expensive. But in the old day, doctors had sanitariums. Bad word. For a health center. And they just made it simple. It wasn't complicated. They were out there in the middle of nowhere on a cheap piece of property, and they made an educational system. Kellogg, Tilden, Erit, Jensen. Lots of others did it that way, and that's Jensen. He was one of the famous progenitors of bowel management, of tissue cleansing. And Jensen was one of the big names behind 80% of all disease begins in the colon. The colon as what? The colon, respected, is a healthy ecosystem, psyche, structure, probiotic, prebiotic, dealing with the pathogens by scraping mucoid plaque. So you're scraping the mucoid plaque with successive colon cleanses over the years and feeding in the probiotics. It's a war in there. It's a battle. It's the good guys versus the pathogens. It's not some static thing where you hear about a probiotic that you ingest in large quantities and everything's going to be fine. Not if psyche, not if structure, not if there hasn't been enough mucoid debridement. Now, if you can see it this way, you can start to generate a healthy ecosystem. And that's my point, by and large. Now, in terms of antiparasitics, the notion that you take the antiparasitic, and I put a couple of good ones, of course, Premier Research Labs, it's Parastat, Whole Arena Antidysenterica, fantastic stuff. There's another company, Marco Pharma, and that guy's got a antiparasitic called Para-A. Very, very good stuff. And there's nothing wrong with sprinkling this stuff into your lifestyle. You should encourage the same way we wean. So I want to give you a perspective on how to go after that aspect of that ecosystem that has to do with going after the parasites. The parasites which we harbor, the parasites which are everywhere, the parasites that are going to get in no matter what we do, and the parasites that aren't going to last in a healthy ecosystem. The parasites that you're going to die with and never know you had, and you'll be all the better for them in the sense that they're never going to bother you. If you look at your large intestine like an ecosystem, you're evolving a healthy ecosystem. So if a parasite does drop in, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't find a stagnant, mucoid, congested, toxic dump site to plant itself into, because that's what parasites love. There are guys in parasitology that will tell you if the parasites come in and don't go away, it's because they have a job to do. You gave them in your dirty, toxic colon a job to do. That's why they're growing. Again, interesting, right? Those of you in the parasitic realm there, those of you over the years that are convinced you have an infectious disease in the intestines and you've been hunting that parasite, and studies have shown and tests have shown and different diagnostic modalities have shown that you've got these groups of parasites you just can't get rid of, look to your psyche, look to your structure, and look to the fact that the terrain is inviting the parasite. You got to shift it to that. Forget the parasite, get healthy. But nonetheless, can you handle it? Can you handle the other side? Shift away from the parasite into the terrain and get the terrain healthy. At the same time, it beseeches you, nonetheless, to find a good antiparasitic and to take them intermittently in moderate to large dosages. You've got to decide that. To take them intermittently over the years. Sprinkle your body with the divine inspiration of antiparasitic herbs. Not complicated. Well, it's not for animals. Animals do it all the time. Animals are always eating antiparasitic herbs. In fact, animals know when they're infected and they change their diets. Any good farmer will tell you that. Any good animal guy will tell you that. Anyone that knows animals knows that animals naturally alter their diet to respond to parasitic invasions. And this is something humans should be doing. And where you get more return is over time, as you're cleansing the plaque, as you're dealing with structure, as you're dealing with psyche, as you're feeding yourself probiotics, as you're feeding yourself prebiotics, as you're sprinkling yourself intermittently with the parasitic cleanses, as you're taking the bentonite clays, as you're mixing and mulling all of this into a lifestyle, do you begin to move the level of health in the intestine into the higher realms? Now, that is an exciting way to look at things. And that is the way you must look at the laws governing the ecosystem of the large intestine. Get to the website, straighttalk.cc. If you've been brave enough to listen to this show, get to the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com.cc. That's with two T's. And listen to this again. And really try to understand, you can't get this on YouTube. You can't get this even out of a book. This is a compilation of a lot of experience and a lot of study and a lot of understanding about how to get the salient essential concepts to you so you can take them in and let them form a foundation to navigate yourself intelligently. And that's what you have to do if you want a healthy ecosystem that we call the large intestine. Now, what I want you to do now, if you're on the website, if you're not, I'll try to describe it. I want you to look at the cure for all intestinal problems. Now, I don't mean that literally, but I do. It's called Nolly. My regular audience knows what Nolly is, but you may be new to the show. At the top of the website today, I put a young lady doing Nolly. And what she's doing is she's moving her intestinal tract from side to side. And while we put billions of dollars into cancer research, why we put billions of dollars into herbs each year, why we put billions of dollars into understanding how to get the intestines healthy, people in yoga have been doing this for thousands and thousands of years. And I beseech you to start to look into and to start to understand the concept behind something like Nolly. It is an isolation that comes with practice that can bestow benefits upon the health of the large intestine in ways nothing can. Just press that button at the top and just go to 1 minute and 10 seconds. Let's see if we can do this together. Go to 1 minute and 10 seconds and watch this young lady perform Nolly. You're at 1 minute and 10 seconds. Take the time to do this. 1 minute and 10 seconds. Do it again. Go to 1 minute and 10 seconds if you can and watch her moving her intestines from one side of her body to the next and one side of the body to the next and one side, like a washboard effect. Taking your intestines and washing your intestinal tract inside and outside with that type of efficacy leaves that isolation is second to none for that which would control the health of the intestinal tract, not to mention the uterus, not to mention the ovaries, not to mention the prostate, not to mention the small intestine, and last but not least, not to mention the scars that build up between and inside the tubes of the intestinal tract. Those scars are known as adhesions. Adhesions form even without injuries. Adhesions form over the years in the intestinal tract, and they rope together like a knot the different layers of the small to large intestine. And if there's not vibrant, dynamic separation of fiber into that lower area, you become stagnant. And that stagnance is really what lays the foundations for problems later. Now look at what we've discussed today. Put it all together, think about it, apply yourself, and give yourself that 80% edge. As always, if you're lost and spinning, my office, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. That's the Costa Mesa office. Come in for an appointment, an evaluation, get put on the right track if you need be. If not, we'll see you next week. Have a great week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.